This is the Marketing Development Podcast, brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy, the online community designed to help you develop your marketing business, skills, and career by exploring the world of marketing and entrepreneurship. Here is your host, Pete Everett.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, and I am joined today by somebody who you may recognize from just two or three episodes ago, Mrs. Helen Pollock. Helen, how are you today?
I am fine, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on again so soon as well. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I mean, you know, technically we're a year apart.
Exactly.
It was before Christmas when we recorded the last one, and it's now the 17th of January at the date of recording. So it is technically a year apart.
It is. Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of the reason that you're on is because there was some idiot who was interviewing you last time who didn't actually get onto what we were going to talk about. So you were more than kind enough to arrange to come back on and would actually record last time's podcast this time. How about that?
That sounds great, yeah. And I have to say, I have to take at least 50% responsibility for just rambling on. So this time I'm going to be ruthless, and I'm just going to talk people through my 5-step process for easy content creation.
That's it, exactly. So this was kind of the thing that we didn't get onto last time. And in all seriousness, we didn't get there because we were having such a great chat about, you know, life, the universe and everything, that it just would have made like a mega episode. So we decided to finish and do this. Structuring content or generating content is something that lots of people struggle with. And the idea of having to do it on a recurring basis can scare the bejeebers out of people. So, you know, what is your process? How do you approach doing that?
So the starting point is always to get absolutely crystal clear on your customer avatar. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, then you're just kind of, you're going to be shooting arrows off in all sorts of directions, and we want to be on target. So that's step number one. And then what you want to do is, step number two is to create content themes around their pain points. Mm-hmm. So it could, you know, just be 5 or even 10 themes around those really you know, terrible problems that your audience has that you can solve. And that's just going to make things so much clearer.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, what you need to create. And the other thing that I always recommend is that you plan repurposing in as well. Mm-hmm. So when you think, you see, you know, if you think of a particular topic, then think about what can you create around that, and how can you reuse every single bit of content that you create? And I think we did talk about that a bit in the last episode. So, you know, is it going to be a long form article that you can post as a blog post on your website? You know, you can make a short video, put that on social media, pointing people to that blog post. What can you take out of that article and use as individual social media posts? Again, pointing people back to that that article on your website. Always make sure that, you know, we can squeeze the juice as much as possible out of every bit of content we create, because life's too short.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think when you're coming up with these ideas, some people sort of shy away from doing potentially date-based stuff. But you know what? If you do a blog post or a video or whatever that's, you know, the top tips for whatever your industry is for 2020, then guess what? In 2021, you can do another one.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not saying you can do that with every piece of content, but having it's one of those things where, you know, doing everything in moderation is... it is more than acceptable. So
yeah.
There are certain things you can do with certain topics that will allow you to do them on, I don't know, an annual or a 6-monthly basis or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And another thing is, I think we often assume that people will see every post that we make on social media. And the reality is they absolutely don't. So, you know, it's okay to reuse stuff from time to time. I mean, yeah, you don't want to be like posting what you posted on Monday, on Wednesday or anything, but by the same token.
We talk to our clients a lot about this, actually, and we come up with what we call a distribution protocol. So with every piece of content that's created, we've agreed how many times things are going to get posted on social media and what the frequency is of those posts. So it's far easier to create those posts whilst you're creating the content because it's all fresh in your head. You know what it's about. You can do the pull quotes. You can do whatever you want. So the key thing to that is we may say do 5 tweets about one piece of content in the first week after its launch. None of those tweets will be identical, but they all will be pointing at the same piece of content. So I guess
Absolutely. That's
really what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, if you've created a blog post that is, I don't know, you know, 5 ways to do X, then each of those 5 ways can be, at least one social media post, if not more, all pointing towards that same piece of content. So, yeah, absolutely right. So the third step is to get your thread sorted before you start writing, because I think that's another thing where people kind of sit down and they're looking at a blank screen. I was going to say blank page, but more like blank screen these days. And they're just like, crap, I don't know where to start. Well, get your thread sorted first. So I have created an article framer sheet, which, you know, I'll give you the link to again for your listeners.
Fantastic.
And that really is based on the Reuters style guide. So in there, it recommends that before starting an article, Reuters journalists work out who, what, where, why, when, how, and so what.
Oh, there you go.
And that just, you know, if you can answer all of those questions, then that will help you to find your thread and know where you're going before you start writing. You know, where are you going with this article? Why is it relevant to your audience? Who does it concern? What's it about? Does it mention a location? For example, if you're writing something about an event, you might have a location in there. When, again, if there's maybe a change to legislation that's going to affect your customer base and you're telling them about it, then that's the sort of thing you'd mention in that box. Why, how, so what? Well, the most important one is so what. Why is this relevant to your customers or your listeners or your audience?
And I think that's a key question to ask for any piece of content that you generate, because at the end of the day, you're expecting your customers to give up their time to read or listen or watch or whatever it is you've created, your piece of content. And if they're going to get to the end of it and think, well, that was a bit pointless, then you're not really teeing them up in a great frame of mind to come back.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where, you know, we get into trouble, I think, sometimes, because people create thinly veiled sales material and call it content. And that's not what content is about. Content needs to be genuinely valuable and helpful to your audience.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So there was one other point I was just going to pick up. You talked about the thread. So by that, you mean kind of the key idea, the key message that's flowing through said piece of content.
Well, it's what's your story? Yep. Your thread is, you know, what is your story? Because be in no doubt, when we write content for our businesses, we're telling a story. We need to get the thread of our story sorted out and know, you know, what's the beginning, what's the middle, and what's the end?
Absolutely. And I think this is where some of the art form comes in for me, because you know, we all know, maybe people don't know, but we do talk about having a narrative to mm-hmm. all of the communications that we put out to the, you know, to the blog posts that we create, the podcasts, whatever. And from where I think people struggle is between the strain of not giving enough sort of emphasis to the story and kind of getting to the point too quickly, which is ultimately where you can become a bit salesy or a bit blunt or a bit lightweight, I suppose, in what it is you're doing, versus never getting to the point at all, because I'm telling a lifelong story here. You're living it with me. And there's, I guess it's one of those things that only really comes with practice, but you do need to sort of hit that stride. And I guess it's also different if you've understood who your target customer is, that customer avatar, right, in step one, then you're probably in a better place to hit that balance.
Absolutely right. You know, if you've done that customer avatar work to start with, then a lot of those questions will, you know, the who, why, what, when, how, where, so what, will have already been answered for you, you know, or you'll know the exact answers. It shouldn't take you a long time. You know, you should literally just spend a couple of minutes working through that article framer to find your story, the thread for your story, if you've done that work already. Whereas, you know, you'll be reinventing the wheel every time if you haven't done that work. But that also kind of moves on nicely to step four.
Yep.
Which works for any kind of written content at all. And even to an extent for videos and stuff. I mean, a lot of this stuff actually does work for other forms of content. But step four is break it down. So if you have a word count for an article, perhaps, you know, you're writing a long form SEO article for your website, or you're writing a feature for a magazine or something, or you're writing a blog post, whatever. Do you have a word count? Mm-hmm. If you do, then no matter what you're writing, you're going to have an introduction, you're going to have a conclusion. Yep. And you're going to have some paragraphs in the middle. So say, you know, we've got 1,000 words to write. We've got an introduction, a conclusion. Well, let's make it 3 paragraphs in the middle, because fundamentally it's always going to be, you know, like an essay at school or a presentation. We're going to, in the introduction, tell them what we're going to tell them. In the main body of the piece, we're going to tell them. And in the conclusion, we're going to tell them what we told them. It's such a cliche, but, you know, as I say, this stuff is not rocket science, but it can be a real eye-opener when you tell people, yes, it's the same for marketing content too. that's can make such a difference. So instead of now, like, I'm looking at this blank piece of paper and I need to write 1,000 words, now you can think to yourself, okay, so I'm going to write a 200 word, and I need 200 words for my intro, I need 200 words for each of my 3 paragraphs, and I need 200 words for my conclusion. And if I'm around that sort of mark, then I'm on the right track.
Yeah,
it just makes it so much easier.
Absolutely. And I don't know how you do this when you're creating content, and you probably create a lot more written content than I do, because I really don't like creating written content, which is why I have a podcast. But when I am creating written content, and this could be this could be a proposal for a client, this could be an advice email that I'm sending somebody, it could be anything.
Yeah,
I'll write an introduction. But then I can guarantee that the introduction will be the last thing that gets amended before I hit the send button or hit publish or whatever it might be. Sometimes you just need to write something to get yourself going. And it doesn't matter if that's not correct when you start writing it. You can always change it.
Yes, you can. Absolutely right. Now, so I've also written a couple of kind of template sheets that I can give your listeners access to, one for blog posts and one for long form articles.
That'd be awesome.
Kind of cover how I would approach writing those things.
Yep.
So one of the things I often do is I like to start with like a stat or a quote or something like that. And I will use that in such a way that introduces my story, and it forms the basis of my story.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that could be, you know, telling people about a new piece of legislation or, quotes that, or so many things you could use just to start that story off well. And the other thing is, always write your title last.
Yes. Yes.
Always write that last, because you might, you know, still sometimes you might not quite end up where you'd expected when you started off. Even if you've done all your work about creating your story and stuff, sometimes you'll find that maybe there's a slightly different slant to it by the time you get to the end.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, always write your title last.
Fantastic. So that's step four. So we're coming into step five. What are we doing now?
We are. So step five is editing. And I was thinking about this the other day. I think I'm going to create a little video about this soon. So when you go back through what you've written, you need to make sure that every word and every sentence counts. That, you know, throughout my career in PR, where I've been given material that clients have written, you know, I've edited so much copy, you know, you wouldn't believe it. Number one problem, too wordy.
Yep.
Too many words that don't count. So make sure that every single word and every single sentence counts. And strip out anything that is extraneous.
Do you think extraneous is a very good word?
It's not even 10 a.m. on a Friday morning. We're not doing badly, are we?
I know. I bet you made that tea Irish. Do you think the reason for that is because people write how they talk, and we often talk, like I'm just doing now, in quite long sentences?
No. Okay. Do you know the reason I say that? Because I often wish that people wrote more like how they talk.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because really, weirdly, something seems to happen, and particularly when people are like in a corporate role and they need to write something, it becomes stilted and dull. And that is like my, you know, as a professional writer, that is like my life's mission, is to make the work that I create lively and engaging. Because I don't care what you do. I mean, I guess there might be the odd exception. A funeral director or something, that might be a bit tricky. But do you know what I mean? There are very, very few sectors where your content, your written content, no matter what it might be, you know, brochure, web copy, blog posts, you know, white papers,
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be, there's no reason why it can't be lively and engaging. And in fact, that's what you want, because we are so bombarded by content these days. If it's not lively and engaging, then people are going to switch off.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that brings us to a key point, really, because the thing with creating content is ultimately, you know, you're writing this stuff because you want people to read it.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's an argument for, well, we're writing it for the search engines and it's going to help us with our authority and XYZ keyword and this, that, and the other. I get that. But at the end of the day, if you're not writing stuff that people are going to read, then...
Don't bother.
Yeah, what's the point? That was exactly what I was about to say. The what you what we sort of advise is that when you're doing this, you do need to think about, so what is the action that you're wanting a reader to take yeah. off the back of this? Now, this is where I'm not wanting to verge this on being salesy, but on the same note, on the basis that people come into your funnel, in inverted commas, at different times, and they will get to a conversion point at different times. Some people that read this article that you're currently working on may now be in a position to want to know more from you. So yeah. how do they do that? And I consume a hell of a lot of content online, and the number of times that you get to the end of it and you just think, you sit back in your chair and you think, well, that's great, but what do I do now? Or there's 10 yeah. minutes of my life I'm never going to get back. Or whatever it might be. So, you know, as the content creator, it is your responsibility to A, create good content, mm-hmm. but also to lead a discussion. I suppose that's a better way of putting it. Rather than selling to people, you're simply trying to lead a discussion so that if they are in a position where they do want to go to the next level, they have the opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. So that's at the bottom of my blog and long form article templates. The last step is, you know, well, aside from editing, is to make sure you've got a call to action in there. Where do you want people to go from here?
Yeah.
You have to do it. This is all part of a holistic kind of system and a holistic approach. And it needs to fit together. So where does this content fit in your pipeline, in the touch points, you know, with your customers? You have to think about that before you start writing this piece. You need to sort that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I be really cheeky and just skip all the way back to step one? Because we did kind of gloss over step one just a little bit, where we said, so step one was always get crystal clear on your customer avatar.
Yes.
Now, I've been through a good number of customer avatar profiles or customer personas or target customer user groups or whatever the heck you want to call them. Yeah. And by far the best methodology I've come across is to actually create a person, and you know, give them a name, give them an age, give them a couple of kids, give them a type of car, give them a sort of house that they live in, their hobbies, etc. And then you write for that customer avatar. And it may be that in your business you end up with two or three different avatars that you're writing towards, but at least you're essentially, when you're writing this piece of content, in a previous agency I used to work in, marketing managers was one of our customer profiles. And we had a lady called Jane, who was 39, had, drove a Ford Fiesta, had a couple of kids, husband worked in a senior management somewhere. We built out this picture.
Yeah.
How do you sort of go about that? Do you agree with what I've just said, or do you have a different way of approaching it?
No, I'm in complete agreement with you. And I was speaking with a client only yesterday, and we created Busy Barbara.
Busy Barbara.
Busy Barbara. she's a holistic therapist, but she is quite marketing aware. You know, she's not someone who doesn't get marketing. But even she was like, you know, I said to her, the first thing we need to talk about is, because we were talking about marketing a new service.
Yep.
Is who, you know, who's your ideal customer? Have you created an ideal customer avatar? Oh, well, no, I kind of know. It's like women or men between 25 and 60. I'm like, let's stop right there.
Yeah. Basically, anybody with a credit card that can give me money.
Exactly. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to cut it. And we in the end, we came up with Busy Barbara. She's 43. She's got a couple of kids. She's separated. And also about, it was very relevant to her business and service about how she was feeling.
Sounds like Busy Barbara's got an intriguing backstory.
Oh, I know she did. She has, I tell you. and she drinks a cup. Actually, this conversation literally took place yesterday. She drinks a few too many glasses of Sauvignon Blanc at the weekends.
Brilliant. I'm liking the sound of Busy Barbara. She sounds like my kind of woman.
So, but the point is, I explained to my client that the reason we went into such great detail was that when we then write or create content for that person, it's much more authentic because we are literally picturing, you know, as close to a real person as possible. And that's what we want to be doing. We're having a conversation with our audience and treating them like they're real people, because they are, you know. Yeah. And it's just trying to, so it's a way of helping us to frame that in our minds so that when we're creating the content, it's as authentic as possible and as close to being a person-to-person conversation as it can be.
That's a great way of looking at it, actually. And while you were talking, it reminded me that last year I was at an event with Alex Curtis, who introduced us.
Yes, indeed.
And there was a guy talking there called Phil Jones, who'd written a book called Exactly What to Say, and it's about the use of language, particularly within sales. He does come from a sales background, but talking about the power of words. And actually, it's a great audiobook if you wanna listen to it or read it even. It's a real book as well, funnily enough. But he talked about his audiobook. He wanted to write a book that people could read within an hour. So his book is only about 80 or so pages long, I believe. Yeah. And in his rationale for doing that, he said that he wanted to, rather than trying to make an encyclopedia about a topic that was going to cover a whole load of people and get them to learn a whole load of stuff about said topic, he wanted to write a book that was for one person to answer one problem. And that was it. One problem for one person. I can't quite remember which way around he put it, but you get the gist. Mm-hmm. And Alex in particular thought, we all thought it was great. It was one of those like value bombshell moments in the room. But Alex has taken that to the next level where I know that he's planning on writing a book which is not very long, that is one problem for one person. And it's taken down that kind of whole mantra, that big problem of writing a book, I need to be a published author, into, well, I just need to answer one problem for one person. I can do that.
And that kind of, so that is absolutely relevant to our thinking about the customer avatar, but it's also, it kind of comes back to the break it down thing as well.
Yeah.
So I know, you know, I'm an Amazon best-selling ghostwriter and business and nonfiction book coach as well now. And one of the first things that I do is help my book coaching clients to break things down, because they often feel like, oh, I want to write a book and it's going to be, it feels like Mount Everest in front of me. I'm just totally overwhelmed. But again, you know, the average business book is between 30 and 50,000 words. So if we take that and we think, okay, well, let's make this 10 chapters, introduction, conclusion, and 8 chapters in the middle. And then, you know, if it's 30,000 words, that's 3,000 words per chapter. Mm. That's not that much. And particularly if it's a business or nonfiction book, this is going to generally be stuff you know about.
Yeah.
It's not like, and I have to think about characters and story arcs and the plot. And, you know this stuff. So then it's more about going back to our customer avatar and thinking, okay, what are their problems? What's their most burning problem? How can I solve it in this book? And where are they starting from? And where do I want them to end up? And that kind of helps you to map out their journey, the journey they will go on by reading your book. So, you know, again, I guess that's the reason I called my business the Content Doc, is because so many of the things that I've learned over the course of, you know, writing professionally over 20 years, so many of those things are applicable from like a literally a blog post to a book. Certainly nonfiction. So yeah, I can, I completely get that Phil has chosen one problem for one person. That makes total sense.
Yeah, and that's by having that in your mind, regardless of what the content is that you're creating, ultimately you are going to end up with a better result at the other end. And, you know, I know I've been leading these sessions, doing customer profiles or personas or whatever you want to call them with people. And they just sit there and they think, you know, this is, why are we doing this? This seems stupid.
Yeah.
But just let your hair down a bit, have some fun with it. Like Busy Barbara,
yeah.
Have some fun with it. If you have a few glasses of Sauvignon Blanc, if you want, it might make the juices flow a bit better. And, but take it from there and just, you know, even if you just create one profile that takes you 10 or 15 minutes and then try writing a piece of content for that profile, and you will see the difference in how you can approach it.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is people are afraid of customer avatars for two reasons. The first one is that they think, you know, I can only have one customer avatar, customer profile for my business. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. You can have, you know, most businesses will have two or three.
Yep.
And the second thing is that they think if I create this customer avatar and try and speak to that person in all my marketing activity, then other people won't be interested. And that's not true either. It's just like, you know, I love that analogy that creating a customer avatar is like, you know, they're like the bullseye on the dartboard.
Yeah.
But there are other rings around that of people who will still use you, even if, you know, they're not your you know, your customer avatar. So yeah,
that's a very good point actually, which because ultimately what you want your marketing to do is attract people that you can help and you can work with.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, your customer avatar, you do want it to alienate some people, and they are the people that you either can't help or the people that don't need what you do.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, that sort of target on a dartboard or is a good analogy, because then what you'll find is that it's not black and white. There's a whole spectrum of gray in the middle of people that you can help, but maybe not quite as much as your target person. And you're not going to alienate those people, because by doing this consistently, they will see things that they resonate with within the content that you produce, within your marketing collateral, within whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And yes, they may only be interested in one portion of the service or the product that you offer, but you're not going to alienate them, because by doing this consistently, they get to understand sort of the undertones of what it is, you know, hey, that really speaks to me. That's the kind of, it's that subliminal message. I can't say it. Subliminal messaging. So your marketing does need to alienate some, but it isn't going to alienate all.
No. And I mean, this is something that I've struggled with myself. I genuinely still struggle with it, even though, you know, I'm a career marketer. So my customer avatar currently is, I want to attract more ghostwriting and business book coaching clients. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to focus on. That is my customer avatar. You know, and probably female entrepreneurs in their kind of, you know, probably around my age, so in their mid-40s. But by the same token, I also enjoy helping small businesses with their business content as well. So And I find it really hard to not try and speak to those people still. And it's killing me. It's killing me, Pete. I know I've got to do it. I know. But even the other day, I was I'm creating a challenge, and I was working on like a price list kind of page on my website. Couldn't quite help myself from popping some stuff on there for my business content coaching clients at the bottom. And now I'm going to go in this morning and take it off. Because I can still work with those people, but I really need, you know, when you create your customer avatar, you're looking at the future, at your ideal future. I just need to have a little word with myself. But it's something I struggle with almost daily. So I can absolutely understand and empathize with others who find it a bit, you know, weird or restrictive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come back and go through the process and essentially record the podcast we didn't record a month ago.
It's a pleasure. There is one. So in terms of the editing stuff, there are two very quick things I don't want to leave off, if that's okay.
Go for it.
First of all, run your spelling and grammar checks on your computer. Mm-hmm. Within Word, and also I think within Yoast, the SEO plugin for WordPress, you can get what's called it's a score on the Flesch Kincaid Reading Ease index, and you want to be having a look at that. There's kind of two ways of measuring it. The first one is a score out of 100. 100 is really easy to read, and you want to be as close to that as possible. Mm-hmm. Then it also gives like a school grade level for your content. And certainly, you know, in my PR training, we were generally taught to aim for a red top style, red top newspaper style of writing. Mm-hmm. So kind of lively, short words, you know, whatever. And we were aiming for an 11-year-old child to be able to understand our press releases and mm-hmm. features fairly easily. And that will vary depending on the sector you're writing for and obviously your target audience. But always try and, you know, just keep an eye on those things, and it will help you to, the Flesch Kincaid Reading Ease Scale will help you to work out your own little, foibles when it comes to writing and areas where you're not clear. So help you with your clarity. And the last thing is professional writers generally have a buddy who will check their work, because no matter how experienced you are, we all tend to suffer from kind of word blindness when we've spent a long time working on something.
Yeah.
So always, spell checkers and stuff, they're not infallible. They don't understand context. So get someone else to, if you can, to always check what you've written. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's I thoroughly agree with that. In my wife's from Yugoslavia, and she came over here and learnt English at Cambridge University. Wow. And she is far better at it than I am. So she's my chief proofreader at every turn.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's get somebody foreign to check the Englishman's work. Come on. Come on. I fully agree with that. Completely. The other thing I would, that mentioning the age group or the grading for your writing and what you're aiming for that to be at, of course, that is context specific. Yeah. If you are a brain surgeon and you are writing a journal about brain surgery,
obviously, yeah,
you're generally going to be slightly over the sort of fifth grade 11-year-old type mind. It is all that bit's all contextual.
Absolutely, but right. Yeah.
In terms of your ease of reading, spelling and grammar checks, we use Grammarly for a lot of our stuff, which is quite good at picking up a lot of the things, but we do need to be careful with that it is quite American. So, you know, your S's and Z's and all that kind of stuff. You know, yes, color really is supposed to have a U in it.
Yes, it is.
That kind of thing, you know. that none of them are infallible, but making sure that you're at least doing your due diligence and doing the best you can is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you so much for coming back. And I know we've mentioned some links and things to different resources. They'll all be in the show notes. So if people do want to get in touch with you, what's the best way of them doing so?
So the best way to get in touch with me is on LinkedIn. So it's, you know, Helen Pollock is my profile. And come and you can see some of my posts on there, and go onto my website, www.thecontentdoc.com. There's plenty of articles on there as well. So that'd be great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Helen. It's been great speaking to you again. Let's not leave it long till next time, but let's maybe leave it slightly longer than
Well, I'd be delighted to come on whenever you'd have me, so
Cheers, Helen. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Pete. Bye for now.